Welcome to the Oklahoma City Podcast with your host, Tim Kilkenny.
Welcome to the Oklahoma City Podcast, Episode 2. Today is September the 3rd, Thursday, September 3rd, and this week I have decided to bring on a guest. He is a friend of mine. He is a husband. He is a father. And he is a realtor here in Oklahoma. Become a close personal friend of mine over the last year. One of my favorite people, Mr. Jim Miller.
Hey, how you doing, Tim?
I am doing all right, sir. So, as we're doing the Oklahoma City podcast, I felt like it would be a good idea to speak to other people in Oklahoma City, and especially people who have like a view of what the rest of the country can look like or are familiar with other metropolitan cities. Obviously, realtors also know kind of the trends, the ebbs and flows of Oklahoma City. So I'll start from the top. How long have you lived in Oklahoma City?
Ooh, let's see. I moved here in 1979 when I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I was born in St. Louis, and I moved to Washington, D.C. when I was 3 when my dad worked for the federal government, and he quit the government to come here to be the area director for Young Life, an outreach ministry to high school students. And we were here through, well, my parents moved to Kentucky in 86.
Wow.
Well, my dad in 86, my mom in 87 when we finally sold the house. And that was the first time I was aware of what selling a house was all about. You know, when I was 10, I kind of knew, but I didn't know anything like I did when I was 17 and my parents were going through that.
Sure.
And then I moved out to Kentucky after my freshman year of college at Oklahoma State. And that's where I met my wife.
Oh, wow.
And after that, so that was 88, I think. And then I went, I was all around a bunch of different places. Mostly California, but I also lived in Texas and Arizona, and then landed back here in 95, 2 months before my son was born. And we've been here ever since.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's fantastic. I had no idea that you had traveled and you had been around that much. When we first spoke a year or two ago, you mentioned that your brother lived in Seattle and that you frequent there.
Yeah.
And I had obviously lived there for quite a long time. So we had that in common to kind of compare things. So yeah.
Go Seahawks.
Yeah. we'll make a lot of people happy with that one. So I guess most of them around here are Cowboys fans. So anyway,
You know, there's a lot of those. There's a lot of Chiefs fans, but there's a lot of people like us that are either from somewhere else or somebody, you know, like a player from OU or OSU or one of the high schools around here went pro and we just followed them. That's how I became a Seahawks fan. I was a Steve Largent fan.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. I became a Seahawks fan, obviously, when I moved to Seattle, but I started off as a young kid as a Chargers fan because I liked their jerseys. And obviously we have no pro team here in Oklahoma City. So you gotta go with whatever you can. So anyway, I guess the next thing would be what brought you here, but you already told us that. So we'll move on to how long have you been in real estate here and how has that shaped your view of Oklahoma City?
Man, good questions. Okay, so first of all, we are about 8 weeks away from me hitting my 10th anniversary as a realtor.
Let's go.
I owned a rental property for about 8 years before that. So I have been in real estate for more like 18, almost 19 years.
Wow.
It'll be 19 in February. So, you know, I've had my finger on that pulse. And of course, I was a homeowner for years before that. I bought my first house in 1996. And, you know, it's just been something that I've been a little bit interested and got more interested with over time. And I kind of became a realtor because of my interest in the local economy and not the other way around. A lot of realtors become, you know, somewhat local economists. Sorry, I almost said economists. That's not a word. They became local economists because they
were forced to.
They were interested in the housing market. And so for me, it's been the other way around. I was a political science major in college, and I've done an awful lot of reading on economics, even though I never took any economics classes in school. I read The Wealth of Nations by myself. I've read a lot of Milton Friedman just because he was some required reading in one of my political science classes. And so I just kept reading him. And I like to read some of the liberal people too, even though I don't agree with them as much. But, you know, I like to know what other people think and feel and believe. So, and I like to give them credit where credit's due. So anyway, sure. That's how I got into all this. And that's my, so the housing market and my view of the local economy are in, they're like intertwined in a way you can't pull them apart.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. And what do you think about the local economy? Like, how do you feel about it? You've raised your son here from the moment your son was mm-hmm. here. You've been here through all the ebbs and flows. Like, what is your favorite part of living here, the Oklahoma City experience?
You know, I'm going to keep it in terms of economically because culturally, there's just no place better than this. I mean, it's people are great. You know, everybody I've ever met here, I can find something good about them. You know, there's just not bad people who live here. People who visit, that's the thing they walk away saying, man, those people in Oklahoma City are so friendly.
Yeah.
But economically, what I love best about this city particularly, and the state in general, is that we are even keel. I mean, the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression that hit this place at the same time should have killed us, and it didn't. And, you know, here we are almost 100 years later, and we have had, since that time, just an extremely consistent market, you know, in terms of job market, in terms of economic growth, and in terms of growth in the housing market. You see those lines, graphs that are up and down and up and down, and then they draw that line in between that shows what the norm is all the way through. Oklahoma City's economic lines don't deviate from that norm too greatly or too deeply. And that's just, that makes it easier to plan how you're going to live. And it does make it easier to take risks. So that's one of the reasons why this is a great place to build a business, because, you know, the risk of just living day to day is not as high as it is on the coasts or in a place like Dallas, or maybe even Kansas City, St. Louis, Minneapolis, places like that, Chicago. You know, we have such an even keel. That's what I love about it here.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I love that you said culturally, I'm just going to leave that alone because it's the best place. It's hard to beat, especially when you're raising kids. You want you want a situation where people talk to each other. You've spent a lot of time in Seattle. Obviously, I have as well. And that's the other side of the extreme. It's kind of everybody do your own thing. And we might wave at each other. We may not. We may be cordial at work, but you're never coming to my house. Like, it's just a little bit more standoffish, a little Seattle freeze. And there's a reason Oklahoma City is nicknamed the Big Friendly. Like, it's not.
Right.
They didn't just make that up. And that is because the people here are fantastic. So I agree with you. I was interested to see, and that might be kind of a theme with the guests, is what can they say that makes Oklahoma City great other than the people? Because obviously that's my reason for doing the podcast. That's my reason for living here. I love the people too, but there is so much else to talk about. So I appreciate you taking the economic view of it.
Absolutely.
What is your favorite thing? And I have to take one of these out. I think I already know that your answer. So I would say, what is one of your favorite things that the city planners and the planning and the development of downtown has brought to the city? But we might have to exclude the Thunder, because I know you're a rabid I know you're a rabid Thunder fan, as am I.
Yes.
It was wild for me, by the way. It's like the first time I mentioned this on the podcast. Obviously, living in Seattle, having the team leave and watching the corrupt Seattle politicians just kind of fumble the team away, and then Oklahoma as a state be blamed for the whole thing. So it was wild to watch. But
it's painful. It's like my sister city over there, and they hate us.
They do. They hate us. I forgot how much they hate us. And I have so many friends on Facebook, obviously from Seattle from my time there, and I posted, you know, about taking my son to the Thunder parade, and they were like, I can't believe how much you've changed. It's like, oh man. that team was gone 8 years before my son was born in Seattle. So what am I supposed to do? But other than that, like, what is one of your favorite things that they've done as far as the development? Because you've actually lived here, you know, longer than most. Like, it used to be kind of an ugly city. Tulsa was the prettier, kind of had the hills and a little bit easier to look at. This was like, I remember as a kid coming here, it was like, like a lot of railroad tracks and and cows, like stockades and oil. And it just like the downtown was right next to the freeway. What has been kind of your favorite thing to watch improve? And
so the entire Maps series of projects, has been just phenomenal. And it's one of those things that started with Mayor Jim Norick, I think, was the first one. The craziest thing about it is where this really, really all started. Back when I was in high school, I graduated from Putnam West in 87.
Okay.
Bricktown was not Bricktown. Nobody called it Bricktown. Nobody knew what it was. It was that nasty part of downtown, kind of by the Myriad, that you never went at night because you didn't want to get beat up, because that's probably what was going to happen. And somebody had the bright idea of taking that whole fear concept that people had and started doing haunted houses in an old warehouse in what is now Bricktown.
This is fantastic. And good history. I forgot about that.
Yeah, there was nothing going on down there. And so when the when people start, I mean, that haunted warehouse was a big deal my junior and senior year in high school. It might have started a year before that, but I mean, it was huge. I mean, lines wrapped around the block. And so there were people, they didn't have food trucks back in those days, but they did have vendors out there selling things and, you know, like the little light up things go around your wrist. Glow bands, I think is what they call them.
Yep.
But, you know, and so it was starting to become an idea of, oh, hey, maybe we should pay attention to this. And so the police were out there just making sure that the folks coming for the haunted house weren't experiencing another kind of fright. And that, it was crazy. About a year or two after I ended up moving away from here after my senior year in high school, because I went to Oklahoma State. My family had already moved to Kentucky, but I still stayed in touch with people here. And they opened a spaghetti warehouse. Was the first thing in Bricktown.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
And that was like the only thing.
Yeah.
And so the mayor that before that was Andy Coates, and then Jim Norick came in, and Andy Coates did a lot to just kind of like lay the groundwork, and Jim Norick came in and built on it, and it was just having a vision for the city. Hey, what can we do with this space? People want to come down here. We've proven that with a stupid haunted house. What can we do year round? And that was, it started with Spaghetti Warehouse, and that was there for like 25 years, which is a long life for a restaurant. A lot of times they go in and out faster than that, but that's what started all of Bricktown. And then they started developing that area. The city got behind that concept. And then they just started repeating that everywhere that they could. Sometimes it was by accident, like the Plaza District is a great one. I used to live near there. My first house was over by that area. And I can remember what they called Third Thursday. It started with a church that was in a storefront on 16th Street, just east of Penn. And they had their church open, and people would come in, and there'd be people playing music in there live, and they just, you know, made it a place where artists could come. And some of the other storefronts there that were empty, they would almost be like a Spirit Halloween store. They'd open just for Third Thursday so they could be an art gallery. And then food trucks started coming. And it grew so much that people were like, hey, maybe we could put a restaurant here permanently. And so like half of the restaurants in the Plaza District started as food trucks and then just started renting the places out there. And it revitalized the entire neighborhood. And they're repeating that now in the Britton District. They've done it in Edmond. UConn's looking at doing the same thing in some of their older parts of town. And it's just it's this great thing that started in the city and it's kind of spreading out to the suburbs now. And it all started with that stupid haunted house in a warehouse in Bricktown.
Wow.
And then about the time I moved back here, I don't think I got to vote for the first Maps project. I think that had already been voted on when I got here, but I had lived in Austin, Texas for 3 months. And while I was there, we went down and visited San Antonio and saw their Riverwalk.
Sure.
And I moved back here just in time to hear that that's what they were going to do in Oklahoma City. They're going to call it the Bricktown Canal. That was the first really big Maps project. And that changed the face of Bricktown. And it took it from being a place that people would kind of frequent to being a destination for people across the region. I mean, people will still to this day drive from Amarillo to come hang out in Bricktown and stay in the hotels here and then go back the next day.
Yep.
And we get people from Wichita. We get people from all over the place. There's people who come from Arkansas. And so tourism is becoming like a bigger industry. It used to be like the second biggest industry in Oklahoma. And 35 years later, it's still the second biggest industry in Oklahoma, but it's a lot closer to oil than it ever was 35 years ago.
Sure, sure.
So, and then, you know, I could go on and on about all the MATS projects, but I kind of wanted to take it back to a time frame where probably most people hearing this didn't know that history, in, unless their parents told it to them.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And when you're are you saying MATS? What does that stand for? Is that an
MATS,
acronym?
I'm sorry. MAPS. It's Metropolitan Area Project something.
Okay.
It's the extra penny sales tax that they did pass that to build the canal and to build a lot of the bridges over the roads that were roads. They dug a whole road down to the basement level of these warehouses that's now the first level.
Right.
And then they dammed up a bunch of creeks and streams so that we have a river now. And the Oklahoma River was part of that. And then the canal branched off of that. And the joke back when they first did this was the Oklahoma River is the only river in the country that needs to be mowed 3 times a year. So, and it was true. And now we have the Olympics come to that place because of what they've done. So,
yeah, that's,
you know, the foresight that continues. And, you know, I've been critical of Mayor Holt at times.
Sure.
But I can't tell you how grateful I am for that guy. I mean, I don't agree with everything he's done or everything he will do. But, man, he has continued the vision that the three mayors before him have had to just make Oklahoma City a destination. And it's becoming that. People come here for fun now, not because they get stuck on a layover.
Yeah. That's, man, that is such cool history. And I didn't know the name of the project. And like, I've watched it as I touched on the first episode, kind of from afar, right? I would come home on leave from the military, come home from Seattle to visit my family for Christmas and holidays and things like that. And every time I came, I'm like, man, there's some cool, oh, this is cool. Hey, what's that? And it seemed like every time I came home, there was something else going on. I had spoke to a gentleman who actually worked on, what is the name of the hotel downtown that's supposedly haunted? The
Skirvin.
Skirvin. I was kind of trying to figure. The Skirvin. I spoke with a gentleman who worked on the Skirvin. He is a buddy of mine. He actually lives in Milwaukee, but he was flown in to help with that project when they rehabilitated it. And he told me at the time that there was an organization, and this may be it, the MAPS project, within Oklahoma City that would look at stuff. And then he said the reason that he thought it was successful is because they had short timelines, 5 to 7 years, and then they would check back in, hey, where are we with this stuff, and then and then move forward with the next thing. Is that kind of true? As he is an engineer, figured he may know, but I don't know if he'd know the whole deal.
Yeah, there is a, so the MAPS, I looked it up, it stands for Metropolitan Area Project.
Okay.
So the S is just from the projects.
Sure.
So I was right the first time. Anyway, they had a citizen oversight board that was set up from the get-go. And we had one MAPS project. When they raised that penny sales tax, I remember my sister complained about it. She's like, I'm voting for this because the city needs it. But they're never going to get rid of that penny sales tax. They're going to keep coming up with things. Mm. Well, they did. I mean, they did MAPS for Kids, which gave a bunch more money to the schools to help with the school's infrastructure. So schools that didn't have air conditioning got it. They built more playgrounds and just all kinds of things. The football fields that they have now. I can remember when all three Putnam City schools shared one stadium, and now they all have their own football field. And stadium, I mean. So all of that came from MAPS for Kids. Then the projects like the Scissortail Park downtown, both phases of that.
Yeah.
The stadium that they're building now for the soccer and multi-purpose, it'll be for soccer and for like regional football games, high school football games, that kind of thing. All of that is from MAPS. And the thing that I'm almost forgetting what your original question was.
Oh, it's
the oversight board.
Yeah.
So they've had a citizen oversight board that started with that first MAPS, and that's continued. But in addition to that, they do have I don't know what the name of the organization is, but it is a it's a city officials with some So the mayor's on it, the city manager's part of it, and then there are some citizens as well that are part of this board, and they look at where the city is every 5 to 7 years, and they're like, wow, how did we do the last 5 years? What do we want to do for the next 5 years? How does that tie into our long-range 30-year plan and 50-year plan and 100-year plan? And we're not on track, we're ahead of schedule. Because of everything that has happened. So, and the thunder coming was a huge part of that.
For sure.
And I don't know if you remember, the only reason we got the thunder is because of Hurricane Katrina. Do you know about that part?
Yep, the New Orleans Hornets. I remember talking to my dad, and he worked downtown, and he was saying he was going to try and go catch a game. It was so exciting that there was a big team locally. So the New Orleans Hornets, yeah. Do they play in Mercedes Stadium there where the Saints play or no?
No, they have their own.
They have their own.
It's right next to it.
Either way, it was destroyed.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's like Smoothie King Arena is what it was. But yeah, when it was destroyed, they brought the team here. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. It was. They brought them here for 2 years. And the funny thing about it is, this guy just retired last year. Chris Paul's rookie season was here in Oklahoma City. And a lot of people don't know that because he was playing for the Hornets, but it was, he had never played in New Orleans except for they found a way to play a couple games a year somewhere in the area to keep the fan base. But he started his NBA career in Oklahoma City and he freaking loved it here. And we loved him. I mean, he was the first big star that we ever got. And so getting him back and him being the one that that coached Shea up from the player side of things was just such a thrill for those of us who, went to the Hornets games when they were new. And so, we had built that what we have now is the Paycom Center. It was the Ford Center back there.
Yep.
Back then.
I remember that.
And it was... that was part of one of the MAPS projects. And originally it was going to be a hockey arena. We thought we were going to get an NHL team. And we made it to the final round when they picked Charlotte instead. And so we didn't get to have a hockey team. And what's funny about it was Bob Funk's organization. They used to own the baseball team here. And they had designed a logo for the hockey team. And they were going to call them the Red Hawks. And since they had already designed that logo, they changed the name of our AAA baseball team that they owned to the Red Hawks. And if you were here back then, you're always like, why do they have such a circular logo? Well, it was designed to go on a hockey puck. So,
wow.
The sports arena was a big deal for us. I mean, being able to get, we wouldn't have gotten the Hornets here if we hadn't had that. And there's no way we would have gotten the Thunder if we hadn't had that that trial run that just fell in our laps, because of the hurricane.
Yeah, you couldn't convince anybody that a town this size could fill that arena. And so you didn't think they wouldn't go for it. But I don't know why I hadn't thought of this before, but I'm kind of sitting back in awe of the juxtaposition of the Sonics leaving and me being there and then them coming here. And then the way that the government in both cities operates, because, boy, let me tell you, in Seattle, it was a whole different situation. They had us vote. So they blew up the Kingdom when I was in the Navy up there. And then had us all vote and say, hey, what do you want to, do you want to pay for this new arena? And the amount that we were all paying was like out of sales tax or something or other, and everybody voted no, we don't want to pay for this. And so they're like, we'll do this and we'll make sure to have community events there, let's vote again. So we all voted again and everybody voted no, so it got shot down a second time. So then the third time it comes around, they don't even put it to a vote. They just force it through and they say, this will be called, the way we're going to bridge this gap is we're going to call this Seahawks Stadium. We'll never sell the rights to it to another team or to another company. And we'll just put it in there and it'll be used for, civic use. Well, that lasted like, I don't know. I mean, I have a coin that says, welcome to Seahawks Stadium, like the very first day. But like, it lasted like 5-6 years before it became CenturyLink Field. They became, and they were notorious for kind of not getting projects through that the people wanted. And kind of wild to see the juxtaposition of how they fumbled away this. And then we built the infrastructure here for it. And it's, that's the irony is not lost on me. And for all the people who think that We Stole the Team. I'd encourage you to go look up, you know, Howard Schultz and Mayor Greg Nichols. They had quite a bit to do with it. And the funniest thing of all was, I think it was when the city proposed they should build a stadium, which is essentially, you know how it is up there. It was not Seattle. They're going to build it in Renton on the worst part of the traffic jam that would happen every single day. They wanted to build it right there. And it was like, who's really doing this? Somebody's trying to torpedo this project. And maybe that was some home cooking for our Oklahoma,
maybe
Oklahoma owners. But anyway, man, it's just, it's just wild because, like I said, as a kid growing up here, this was not a cool city. And I think the most amazing thing to me is I-40 being moved. How far was that move? A mile? Like they moved that thing pretty far.
It's a little more than a mile in some areas. And that my biggest concern then was, what are they going to do with that space? And so when they turned it into Oklahoma City Boulevard and put all of the, you know, plants and flowers and trees around it, I'm like, this is what we need more of. And then lo and behold, we get Scissortail Park. And man, I love that park. I don't know if you spend much time there. I wish I could spend more time there. But it's one of those things that every time I'm there, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad we have this in the city. It was so foresightful for them to build this right into downtown before the city continues to expand, because it's going to. And it has.
Yeah, absolutely it has. Yeah. No, I touched on the marathon last week, but it ends in Scissortail Park. The farmer's market's in Scissortail Park. That whole thing moving down, because when I was a kid, you know, you could drive right up on it. I mean, people who just moved here don't know, like, the freeway, you could almost throw something off of it and hit a building. Like, it was right up on
the
downtown. So,
When we first moved here, I remember my brother, I was 10 and my brother was 8. And we thought it was so cool that there was a moving van on top of that building rotating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was right off the highway, you know, that U-Haul.
It was a U-Haul, right? Storage. Yeah, I remember that,
it's
man.
It's still there, yeah.
You're bringing back memories. That's crazy. Is it still there?
That was the coolest thing about Oklahoma City.
Well, and I remember, you brought up so many cool things. Like, I remember as a kid, and I grew up north of Tulsa, I grew up in Bartlesville, but I remember as a kid, we'd come through Oklahoma City to go to, like, church camp or down to Dallas or whatever. And in youth group, we would go to the Spaghetti Factory. We would come into Oklahoma, because it was a big deal. Oh my gosh, we're going to get to go to the Spaghetti Factory.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. Yeah. Well, yeah, from when I can remember being excited when we were going to get a Chili's. Now I don't ever go there. We have so many. That's another thing I love about what's developed. We just started getting some people that know how to cook in this city, and they learned how to run businesses too. And we've just become a food capital in the last 5 years. I mean, when we got Gordon Ramsay's, I was like, okay, we've made it. Yeah. You know, people know we are a place to go for food when somebody like Gordon Ramsay builds a restaurant here.
Absolutely. And what do you know about it? What are your opinions on that? Because that is kind of a hard thing to pinpoint. What sparked the food culture and kind of where is it now? I do love the food culture here.
Man.
When I was young, I brought a friend home to visit Oklahoma with me from the Navy, and they asked me at one point, is every restaurant in Oklahoma an all you can eat?
Hard to find those.
For a long time, it was some all you can eat, like, you know, cafe style. But what do you think is the driver of the food culture here?
Well, it kind of happened overnight. I mean, I wish I could pinpoint it. It just seems like, I mean, if you're going back when Bricktown was first new, you started getting some decent restaurants. The Bourbon Street Cafe was kind of a new concept. We didn't have a lot of Cajun food around here. And having moved from here to Kentucky, you know, Cajun restaurants in Kentucky were like Mexican restaurants here when I lived here the first time. And you couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting three of them. And and so coming back here, again, there wasn't any Cajun food until Bourbon Street Cafe opened. Now there's all kinds of Cajun restaurants. And I think what it is, there's still, Oklahoma City's still kind of a place where it feels like there's not a lot to do except go out to eat. And even though there's a lot more to do than there used to be, that's just always been kind of the thing. We would go out to eat. And back in the old days, it was Applewood's and Molly Murphy's and Sullivan's were the big places to go, and all of those places are gone now. But they kind of set the stage for, you know, these are you can have a cool restaurant and people will come. And they just, you know, as the population grew, we just got more of them. And then we started getting people moving here from really good culinary places like California and on the East Coast. And I think COVID really helped boost that.
Sure.
Because restaurateurs had to shut down everywhere else, but they didn't really hear. Some of them did. But the smart ones figured out, oh, we can do to-go orders. And that's when Uber Eats and DoorDash and Grubhub, they kind of blew up at that time because the restaurants needed to stay in business. One of my kids was working at the Hall's Pizza Kitchen at the time.
Oh, great.
And they did so well that they gave a dividend to their hourly employees. They gave them a bonus for the business doing so well to just, you know, kids working there.
Wow.
And it's just a way to appreciate the people for working so hard. They tripled their business and when everything was shut down. And at the same time, there was other restaurants that didn't figure out how to do that, and they closed, and some of them forever. But it was shortly after that when we started seeing things crop up. And my favorite thing that really kind of put us on the map for the rest of the culinary world is the tasting restaurant called Nonesuch.
Okay.
And out of nowhere, I mean, literally most people who lived in Oklahoma City had never heard this place. And it was voted the best new restaurant in the country by Bon Appetit magazine.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, you know, that's like Variety.
It's a big deal.
Hollywood.
Big deal.
Big deal. And so like everybody you've ever seen on the Food Network came here to eat at that place. And Gordon Ramsay was one of them. And he's like, well, this is the kind of thing that's going on in Oklahoma City. I want to be a part of it. And he wasn't the only one. And then at the same time, you have I can't remember his name all of a sudden. The guy who owns the Gray Sweater and two other restaurants. He's a James Beard Award winner. So that was a big deal. And his name is Andrew Black. I'm glad I remembered it. Great. I've not met him, but I've read articles and seen interviews with him. And he's just such a great, great representative of our city. And his restaurants are phenomenal. And so you have a few people doing things like that. And other people start, you know, either saying, well, I can do that with this style of food, or saying, I can do that just as well or better. And so we just have so many cool places to go now. And they're all over the city. I mean, from Edmond to up there by Topgolf at Memorial and
Chisholm
Western.
Creek.
Chisholm Creek, thank you.
Yep.
Man, that's a great place. And UConn down there by the highway has their place. Norman's got some great places. Edmond has all those great restaurants that are there around there. Where they built up their walking downtown area that you can go any time of the year and walk from place to place and get a good bite to eat and go to some great shops. And then, you know, we also have some great coffee shops. I mean, some of the best coffee shops I've ever been to. And I've been to Seattle and I've lived in LA. Some of the best coffee shops are here. I have a daughter who is a barista at Clarity, and those people take their coffee seriously.
I mean,
if you haven't been to Clarity, you ought to go because they know their beans. They're really, really smart about coffee.
And for sure. And that's some of the stuff that I was missing when I would come home to visit. I'd be like, where's the coffee culture? Where's that? Well, now you have it
now
all here. So that is absolutely fantastic. Well, Mr. Jim, it is a pleasure to have you on the second episode of the podcast, really the inaugural guest. I couldn't think of a better person. I'm super happy
Thanks,
I reached out. Do you want to stick with us just for a couple minutes? I know you have kind of a hard cutoff coming up, but just to go over the events happening this week, or do you got to go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I'll stick with you.
Okay, cool. So, before we go any further, can you correct the record for last week? I mispronounced the opera. What is it? Aria.
Aria. Yeah, okay. That's the song that the diva sings is an aria. So now you know.
So now I know. I'm reading through it, trying to like skim. I'm like, aria? I've done a few podcasts, and back in my younger years, I was like, hey, I'm going to go through. I'm going to edit that. I'm going to take that out. I want to sound smart. And now I'm like, no, I said it. Yep. That's what it is. We'll roll the tape.
We're even because whatever the word was I said earlier that I couldn't say, economist. I almost said economist. So there we go.
No worries at all, sir. So, looks like today, Thursday, September 3rd, SNU football versus Henderson State in Bethany. Is that the kickoff of the college football season? I mean, tonight is kind of where it all begins.
Yeah, here locally. Yep. Yeah. Yep. There was a 0 week last week, but here locally, that's the first one.
Okay. And then Felipe Esparza Comedy and Bricktown Comedy Club tonight at 7. So I'm not familiar with that person. Are you?
Nope.
Nope.
I bet he's funny.
Bet he is. All right. And then Rocklahoma. I feel like I heard about that when I was young. I think that is a long-standing musical tradition. But that's Labor Day weekend up in Pryor. Looks like some stuff that actually was from, you know, our younger years, Godsmack, Slayer, Stone Temple Pirates, Dropkick Murphys, Papa Roach. I'd hate to see the median age of that one. But anyway.
Yeah. I saw Godsmack with Disturbed at the zoo a few years ago.
No kidding.
Man, they blew me away. I only barely knew their music, but live, they are phenomenal. So yeah, people should go check them out.
There you go. Saturday, September 5th, the OKC Time Travelers Vintage Expo at the Convention Center. So vendors, vintage clothing and home goods, $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Kids 12 and under are free. So interesting. Vintage Expo. Yep. So that's something that, you know, in my younger years, that was like a Portland thing, you know, to wear something and be kind of ironic. Oh, look at this. It's old. But now it's made its way all the way here. So that'll be
a lot of vintage shops around here, too. So that's cool.
Absolutely. Monday, September 7th on Labor Day. So Labor Day weekend coming up. Minus the Bear at Tower Theater. Tickets are $54 from that one. And then the Food and Brew Festival. This is the final day at Frontier City. So it runs all weekend. I've never been to that, but I guess there's local food trucks and whatnot who have food and local breweries who bring stuff to Frontier City. I don't know. Mixing beer and roller coasters doesn't sound like the best idea to me, but
nope.
To In each his own. It's 105. I want to slam some beers. I want to hop on a roller coaster. So
if and that's eat a your, hot dog.
If that's your thing, you got a place to go. I will probably be more likely at the Bluey's Big Play at the Civic Center. So I think that is Tuesday at 6:30. So that one's obviously
bring your great, Kleenex.
Great for family. Yeah, Bluey is fantastic. Yep. As well as we got a Comets game versus Sugarland at the Chickasaw Ballpark, 6:05 p.m. on that one. And then Peaches at Tower Theater at 8 p.m. on Tuesday, September 8th. Wednesday the 9th, another baseball game at Chickasaw Ballpark. It's at 12, so it's at noon. Record Company at the Beer City Music Hall. And then this is a good one. Next Wednesday, September 9th, Moonlight Movies. 10 Things I Hate About You, just outside the Myriad Botanical Gardens.
So nice.
That one is, I think it's free.
They usually are, yeah. I've gone to that. That's great. It's fun to do that.
Super cool. And then usually there's food trucks around so that you can buy something and watch a movie outdoors. And then let's see, on to next Thursday, September 10th, Tony Thunder at the Art Show, opening at DNA Galleries in the Plaza District, as mentioned earlier in the show. And then it looks like Briscoe is at the Beer City Music Hall on Thursday, September 10th. So those are the things coming up. Obviously, is there a Sooner game coming up?
Yes, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Kick off against UTEP.
Yeah, UTEP. At home. And then is who?
At 7 o'clock.
And OSU, who is OSU playing tomorrow?
Yes, OSU. I should know this.
I should know this too. I can't
it's
believe
Saturday.
It.
Oh, Tulsa. They're playing
Tulsa. Oh, that's
Tulsa.
Right. That's right. I saw the sign. Yes, I saw the sign.
It's in the afternoon. I can't remember if it's 12 or 2:30, but it's one of those two time frames.
As a football guy, you would think that I would clearly have those two things in, but I skipped them. Those are both tomorrow. So yes, I did see the sign.
It's no. Tulsa's, OU is tomorrow and Oklahoma State and Tulsa is on Saturday.
There we go. Boom. This is why I got you here today, Jim. I appreciate you.
I'm glad I stayed.
Thank you for lining me out on the schedule. And again, I appreciate you coming on the second episode. And do you have anything you want to add? If people want to get a hold of you, if they're interested in real estate, how can they get a hold of you?
The easiest way that to remember is the website that I maintain, and the name of my company is homesforok.com. I am a realtor, and I help people buy and sell houses. I work with individuals and investors, and I just like having fun with people, and I treat every customer and client like they're my friend, and then that way I don't ever have to work. I'm just hanging out with my friends.
That's fantastic. I can attest to that. You do treat everybody like a friend. I do feel like you're a friend of mine. And
you are.
And I have felt that way since the first time we spoke on the phone. So,
me too.
Anyway, really appreciate you, Mr. Jim. Hope you have the best Labor Day weekend. And
you too, brother.
We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. And cut. All right. I think that went well, man.
That was great.
Yeah.
That went really well.